Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio Network. Nova M Radio Network, thank you very much for tuning in this evening. Hope you had a good day. Floods where you are? Huh? Tornadoes, hurricanes, glaciers melting, heat, humidity, smog, ozone, crap in the air? Or did you have a distillate of all of that and hear Bush today speaking at the Veterans of Foreign Wars Convention where he invoked Vietnam? This guy has a lot of nerve talking about Vietnam, doesn't he? We'll get to that tonight. But he did. He actually invoked Vietnam as a foreign policy model to avoid where it concerns Iraq. And in listening to this jackass, you've got to understand something. He, like Cheney and the rest of the Republican leadership, they had an exit strategy for Vietnam. They just didn't go. But Bush thinks we got out too early from Vietnam and apparently thinks the Iraqi disaster should last at least as long. A year, that was our longest war in the history of the United States. Do you realize that? Can we impeach him yet? Or do we wait for 58,000 dead Americans? And, well, we've already reached 2 or 3 million dead Iraqis, which was the body count of non-Americans in the Vietnam conflict. But as Cheney said during the 60s, he had better things to do than join the military. And as Bush said, screw all of you, I'm going off and doing drugs. What's Bush talking about? Another wall in Washington? He also thinks al-Maliki, whatever the hell the guy's name is, doing a heck of a job over there in Iraq. I guess he is doing just what the Bushes want. Nothing. And we lost 14 American soldiers in the last 24 hours. More than 14. 14 in a helicopter crash that the military insists was a mechanical failure. If it was a mechanical failure, then goddamn the U.S. military. For putting 14 soldiers on a helicopter that can't fly. But if it wasn't a mechanical failure. So we have moron sounds tonight from Bush and some other stuff. Stick around. I'll tell you, it's, man. Today was one of those days here in Atlanta. Temperature 101, heat index about 107. Damn near impossible to breathe outside. This in Atlanta, city built in a forest. That was one of the reasons I moved here in 1970. Gorgeous city. So I'm in a particularly bad mood this evening, and also got some information about one of our serious affiliates in California that may be changing formats, which is a heartbreaker. I hate to see that happen. And the format will be sports talk and not political talk. So I'm not in a good mood tonight. I'm not that that matters, not that anybody gives a damn, except me. But in listening to Bush this evening when Kathy was cutting up these sound bites, I was sitting over at the other computer doing some work, and I was listening to Bush's voice, and it suddenly occurred to me that I really despise this bastard. I mean, I hate this man and this administration to a depth that is shocking to me. It really is, because I understand that hatred can do more damage to the vessel in which it's carried than the object upon which it's poured. I understand all that. I know that. And it doesn't, I don't obsess on it, but when I hear his voice or when I start doing show prep for this program, and I have to go over what this monstrous twit has said or done or ordered or what his operatives, his brown shirts, his bully boys, his what are they called now? His I wrote about it today. What is it? The rally squads. What they have done. I get really, 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 really angry. I get furious. Maybe you do too. Huh? Not only does the Republican Party and the neo-fascists that are now in control of this country, not only do they want no dissent, they don't want Bush to see whatever little tiny shreds of dissent might still be available. They want to keep it all out of this twit's eyesight. Now, you remember, we talked about this, I think, a couple of years ago. There was a case in Charleston, South Carolina. Two people, Jeffrey and Nicole Rank, went to a Charleston, South Carolina event wearing T-shirts with the word Bush crossed out, you know, with the universal no on, this, on the front. And the back of the shirt said, regime change starts at home. Remember? And that was what his said, his T-shirt. Hers said, love America, hate Bush. Now, there were members of the White House event staff, not federal employees, volunteers from Christian thug groups or Republican State Committee, whose job it is to surround protesters, to first of all, prevent them from entering into anything where the Bush bastard attends, and to keep them out of his line of sight, because he'll wet his pants if he sees people who are protesting against him. So members of the White House event staff told these two people to cover their shirts or leave, according to a lawsuit filed on their behalf by the ACLU. They were they refused to do that. They were arrested, handcuffed, and jailed before authorities in Charleston, South Carolina, the absolute butthole of the Bible Belt, Charleston, South Carolina. The authorities there dropped the charges and apologized. The ACLU took him to court. There was a First Amendment case, and this couple got $80,000, from the federal government in the settling of this lawsuit, but no admission of wrongdoing on the part of the Bush crime family. Now, what was Bush talking about at that event? His speech was about freedom of speech. I hate this guy. Now, in the discovery phase of this trial, a White House manual was presented that gave presidential advanced staffers instructions in the art of what is referred to as deferring or deterring potential protesters from Bush's public appearances around this sad country. According to the Washington Post, among other things, any event must be open only to those with tickets tightly controlled by organizers. In other words, only brain-dead, mouth-breathing, fake Christian, right-wing Republican thugs. That's all. Those are the only people to come in. Nobody else can come in. Those entering must be screened in case they are hiding secret signs, and be especially aware of cloth signs that can be folded and tucked up inside one's garments to be taken out and flung in the face of God-fearing Republicans at a most inopportune moment, like when the cameras are on. Any anti-Bush demonstrators who manage to get in, according to the manual, should be shouted down by neo-Nazi brown shirts, referred to as rally squads. You saw some of these bastards during the so-called a recount attempt in Florida, the ones that were beating on the doors and windows of the buildings, the courthouse, where they were trying to effect a count of who voted for whom. These guys, brown shirts, bastards, thugs, neo-Nazis, or as they referred to in this document, rally squads. Now, the rally squads are to be stationed in strategic locations inside the venue to shout down any protesters. And if that doesn't work, the protesters should be thrown out. I would love to be in a place like that and have one of these Republican twits put his or her hands anywhere near me. Oh, God. That's almost orgasmic thinking about that. Now, that doesn't mean that the Bush crime family is against dissent. Oh, no, yeah, that's okay, just as long as Chucklenuts doesn't have to see it. In fact, the manual outlines a system for those who disagree with Bush to voice their views. It directs the White House advance staff to order local police, quote, to designate a protest area where demonstrators can be placed, preferably not in the view of the event site or motorcade route. End quote. This is going to be a rough night. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Really sad. Are there any queers in the theater tonight? Get them up against the wall. Now there's one in the spotlight. He don't look right to me. Get him up against the wall. Bye.
should not protest because it is in the best interest of freedom and humankind.
We play this as a parody, but it's not. You know, sometimes I have a feeling that we're going to come on this program some night and say goodbye to everybody. Not because we're leaving Nova M. I'll never leave Nova M. This is the greatest company in the world. But because something will have occurred. By the way, I said Charleston, South Carolina is where the event occurred where Jeffrey and Nicole Rank were busted for wearing T-shirts. Of Charleston, West Virginia, my bad. Thanks for the correction. Anyway, to keep out of Chuckle Nuts' sight any sort of a protest or dissent which would shatter his world. It would make him fall apart. This rat bastard honestly believes, because he has nothing around him except people who say, that's right, you were saying, no, no, everything's okay. Now here, do this. Okay, okay, okay. Dissent to this guy? That's the same as urinating on the cross. So the Presidential Advance Manual, dated October 2002, so you know it predates anti-war demonstrations. And it's got the stamp on it, sensitive, do not copy. The a manual was released under subpoena to the ACLU as part of this lawsuit filed on behalf of Jeffrey and Nicole Rank. White House spokesman Tony Fratass said he could not discuss, Fratto said he could not discuss the manual because it is an issue in two other lawsuits. So, you know, it's an ongoing criminal investigation. It's an ongoing lawsuit. I'm sorry. The manual offers advanced staffers and volunteers who help set up presidential events guidelines for assembling crowds. Those invited into a VIP section on or near the stage, for instance, must be extremely italicized, supportive of the administration. It goes on to say that while the Secret Service screens audiences only for possible threats, volunteers should examine people before they reach security checkpoints and look out for signs, and make sure to look out for folded cloth signs. To counter any demonstrators who do get in, the sneaky little slimy bastards, advance teams are told to create rally squads of volunteers with large handheld signs, placards, or banners with favorable messages. Sieg Heil! Sieg Heil! Einstadt! Ein Volk! Ein Führer! Squads should be placed in strategic locations and, quote, at least one squad should be roaming throughout the perimeter of the event to look for potential problems. Oh, my God. I'm sorry, I had that wrong. It's Ein Volk, Einstadt, Ein Führer. We are so close. We are so close. Deep breath. Looks like Dennis Kucinich's campaign is getting the Bush rally squad treatment from ABC News. Have you heard about this? Kucinich campaign is waiting for ABC News to explain its actions. What happened was the ABC is being charged with an inexplicable way in which the network handled its post-debate online coverage of Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich over the past couple of days. Among the outrages that have energized tens of thousands of Kucinich supporters and even non-supporters, and according to what I have here, thousands of whom have flooded the ABC News website and other online news sites with comments of protest, are the following. Kucinich was apparently deliberately cropped out of a politics page photo of the candidates. We're talking about the discussion or the debate, whatever it was, that was hosted by Judas Stephanopoulos Sunday. Sometime Monday afternoon, after Congressman Kucinich took a commanding lead in ABC's own online Who Won the Democratic Debate survey, the survey was dropped from prominence on the website. ABC News has not officially reported the results of its online survey. After the results of that survey showed Kucinich winning handily, ABC News, sometime Monday afternoon, replaced the original survey with a second survey asking, who is winning the Democratic debate? During the early Monday voting afternoon and evening, U.S. Senator Barack Obama was in the lead by sometime late Monday, early Tuesday. Kucinich regained the lead by a wide margin. Sometime Tuesday, ABC apparently dropped the second survey from prominence or killed it entirely. Oh, and as everyone who watched that Sunday presidential forum is aware, Judas Stephanopoulos did not ask Kucinich a question until 28 minutes into the program.
Tell them that the Nazis never really went away. They're out there burning houses down and peddling racist lies. And we'll never...
Oh, and ABC News has failed to respond or even acknowledge these objections and inquiries.
Nazi dies.
So, what we'll do is just consider the fact that George W. Bush is not allowed to see protesters and Dennis Kucinich is not allowed to enjoy the fruits of his labor as a viable Democratic Party candidate. My goodness, what does all of this mean?
They're getting fat, they're making a taste.
Notion of being able to speak freely with political discourse.
All right, from our newly established You Can't Make This Stuff Up file, Bush invokes Vietnam in arguing against an Iraq pullout. This is just astonishing. For how long have these thugs sat and screamed and beat their heels on the ground and cried their eyes out about how Iraq was not Vietnam? But today in Kansas City, Bush told members of the VFW that, quote, that is now, people argue that the real problem was America's presence and that if we just withdraw, the killing would end. He went on to say that one of the legacies of Vietnam is the price of America's withdrawal was paid by millions of innocent citizens whose agonies would add to our vocabulary new terms like boat people, re-education camps, and killing fields. Excuse me? What's this we? What's the use of the pronoun we? We hid in a National Guard unit and then abandoned that. As I recall, we went AWOL, if I remember the script correctly. We didn't go to Vietnam. We ran away as fast as possible. We got Daddy to pull strings. And who the hell is writing this script? The killing fields were in Cambodia. And we supported the Khmer Rouge. Well, another laugh, Bush made the argument that withdrawing from Vietnam emboldened today's terrorists by compromising U.S. credibility. And he cited a quote from Osama bin Laden that the American people would rise against the Iraq war the way they rose against the war in Vietnam. He's citing bin Laden? Bush is quoting his pal, his business partner, bin Laden? You can't make this stuff up. You can't. Democratic Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, the man who has absolutely no respect for the U.S. Constitution and who is himself a complete coward, terrified of Bush, terrified of opening his mail and finding an envelope full of anthrax, said today, President Bush's attempt to compare the war in Iraq to past military conflicts in East Asia ignores the fundamental difference between the two. Our nation was misled by the Bush administration in an effort to gain support for the invasion of Iraq under false pretenses, leading to one of the worst foreign policy blunders in our history. While the president continues to stay the course with his failed strategy in Iraq, paid for by the taxpayers, American lives are being lost and there is still no political solution within the Iraqi government. It is time to change direction in Iraq, and Congress will again work to do so in the fall. You make me sick, Reed. You just turn my stomach. I'll tell you what, history is going to record some history somewhere, not written by Americans, because that will not be allowed. But history will be written by somebody, somewhere, about how this republic ended. And people like Harry Reid will be prominent in the collapse, in the structuring of the collapse of the United States of America. So let's listen to Bush at the VFW National Convention, Kansas City. Was it Missouri or Kansas? Oh, hell, I guess it only matters if you live there, right? Chicken hawk, cokehead, draft dodging, AWOL, raisin brain actually used Nam as an analogy to his unjustified attack on Iraq. There are a lot of comparisons, you fool. But not the ones you made. This is really an outrageous display of this man's abysmal ignorance. Particularly because he's using Vietnam as some kind of rationale for his murder spree and resource grab, as if Vietnam is some kind of shining example of foreign policy success had we just stayed the course. The only reason Vietnam survived and Colin Powell can dance around and drag on a stage in a theater in Hanoi is because we left. This man is delusional. Oh, by the way, where was Cheney during Vietnam? Oh, that's right. Or Irving Libby, or Rumsfeld Attu, or Rove, or Wolfowitz, or John Ashcroft, or Spencer Abraham, Andy Carr, John Bolton, Richard Pearl. The list goes on and on and on. Listen here as he mixes Nam with a dose of Osama and a dash of 9/11 to try to justify an attack on Iraq, which, as we all know, had... Oh, never mind.
Whatever your position is on that debate, one unmistakable legacy of Vietnam is that the price of America's withdrawal was paid by millions of innocent citizens,
oh God,
whose agonies would add to our vocabulary new terms like boat people,
depleted uranium,
re-education camps,
depleted uranium,
and killing fields.
Depleted uranium.
There's another price to our withdrawal
Fallujah.
From Vietnam. And we
White
can hear
phosphorus.
It in the words of the enemy we face in today's struggle.
Raped civilians.
Those who came to our soil.
Roasted children.
Thousands of citizens on September the 11th, 2001.
Oh, my God.
In an interview with a Pakistani newspaper after the 9/11 attacks, Osama bin Laden declared that the American people had risen against their government's war in Vietnam, and they must do the same today. As we saw on September the 11th, a terrorist safe haven on the other side of the world can bring death and destruction to the streets of our own cities.
Oh, God.
Unlike in Vietnam, if we were to withdraw before the job was done, this enemy would follow us home.
Yeah, they will.
And that is why, for the security of the United States of America, we must defeat them overseas so we do not face them in the United States of America.
Yeah, burn them! Nuke them! Nuke the... Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. I got a little carried away there. I'm sorry. Oh, my God. He just whips me up into a fervor, a spit foam-flecked fervor of patriotism. Oh, God. I want to kill them all. Thank you, George. George and Jesus. Oh, please, please, unleash my nuclear arsenal, George. We've got the bombs. We've got the bombs. Let's kill the sons of bitches. Let's get them all. Get them all.
the Iraqis, the Iranians, the Syrians, the Jordanians, the Egyptians, the Jews. We're going to get the Jews eventually anyway. Let's get them now. God, I love you, George.
Excuse me. Chucklenuts then continues his ill-conceived history lesson. Every non-vet assembled should have been insulted by this draft-dodging, drug-abusing, cowardly, pandering pissant.
I recognize that history cannot predict the future with absolute certainty. I understand that.
Kill him!
But history does remind us...
Kill them all!
...that there are lessons applicable to our time.
Iranians!
That we can learn something from history.
Iraqis!
Free Iraq's not going to be perfect.
Jordanians!
A free Iraq will not make decisions as quickly as the country did under the dictatorship.
Get the Kurds, too!
Many are frustrated by the pace of progress in Baghdad, and I can understand this.
Yeah?
Prime Minister Maliki's a good guy, good man, with a difficult job, and I support him.
There's the kiss of death!
And it's not up to the politicians in Washington, D.C., to say whether he will remain in his position. That is up to the Iraqi people who now live in a democracy and not a dictatorship.
Yeah, okay. I got one word for you. Hamas. No, I got another word for you. Since you're using Vietnam, Diem. I got another word for you. Marco. No, I got another word for you. Noriega. No, I got another word. Oh, jeez.
It's incredible. It's just incredible. It's just incredible. We can learn something from history? Yeah. Yeah, we can. Not to let your thugs steal another election or pursue another criminal invasion of an oil-rich nation. That would be something from immediate history. And it's not old history either, George. It's not that old stuff, you know. You know, it's not that history that's so far back it doesn't count. Oh, my God. We have one more here. I will try to compose myself and calm down. He just inspires me to want to kill and kill and never stop killing. He inspires me to want to learn how to fly a huge airplane and load the Bombay with nukes and find some country full of people who speak funny and just turn them all into memories. He does. He moves me, this man. I don't know. Let me compose myself.
Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find when your death takes its toll.
Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you...
Perhaps the most important lesson that I learned in Vietnam is that you cannot fight a guerrilla war with conventional forces.
Oh, really? You learned that? Was that before or after the cocaine? You cowardly little bastard. If you did in fact learn that, then why are you fighting a guerrilla war with conventional... Oh, never mind. This man is insane. Do you all understand that? You right-wing lurkers, my God, shame on you. Shame on you for supporting a psychopath, a verifiable, certifiable... psychopath. Here's our last bit of drivel from the AWOL snow-nosed W the Drunkard on the great American victory that could have been Vietnam. the victory that could have been Vietnam if we just wouldn't have cut and run. Listen as he makes more false promises to the veterans, knowing how our vets have been and continue to be treated. This is truly disgusting.
There's one group of people who understand the stakes, understand it as well as any expert, anybody in America.
Except
those
you.
Those men and women who wear the uniform.
Yeah, not you.
Through nearly 6 years of war, our troops have performed magnificently. Day after day, hour after hour.
6 years.
They keep the pressure on the enemy that would do our citizens harm.
The enemy. Oh, my God.
They've overthrown two of the most brutal tyrannies of the world and liberated more than 50 million citizens.
What?
Our troops,
oh my God,
are seeing the progress that is being made on the ground.
Cut this! Stop it!
And
stop
as they
it!
Take the initiative.
Stop it! Liberated more than 50 million citizens? I don't think I want to hear the rest of it. All right, go ahead. Play the rest of it.
See, from the enemy, they have a question. Will their elected leaders in Washington pull the rug out from under them just as they're gaining momentum and changing the dynamic on the ground in Iraq?
Oh, my God.
Here's my answer.
Bring them on.
We'll support our troops. We'll support our commanders. And we will give them everything they need to succeed.
Oh, my God. You murderous dog. This is, you know, Nixon was megalomaniac. Lyndon Johnson was some kind of a political animal that couldn't think beyond politics. Reagan was a joke, an actor. George Herbert Bush was a stopgap. Clinton was Clinton, but this guy, this George W. Bush, this is astonishing to think that someone like this is the President of the United States.
I just want to make sure I understand something, because I was just a babe when Vietnam was wrapping up. But I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. Bush is saying that we needed to stay longer, that leaving Vietnam was a bad thing. That if he had been president at the time, for example, that troops would have still been in there into the 70s, 80s, and beyond? I mean, is that what...
Well, there are a few things that this psychopath leads out of his post-war history of Vietnam, and Prairie 2 sent me an email about this. First of all, the number of deaths in the south of that country dwindled rapidly to zero after the North Vietnamese took over. The puppet government we maintained in the south had killed people at an incredible rate. The people sent to re-education camps were all released after a short time. The people Bush disappears are likely never to be seen again. No evidence has emerged that the people sent to these camps were tortured. The boat people, remember, the people that went to re-education camps were people who had turned against their own country in support of the invader. It's a wonder they weren't all lined up and executed. What would we do in this country? The boat people were all economic refugees, and after the bloom faded on the political rose, few were given refugee status in the West. Oh, I know. They opened up restaurants in California. Oh, okay. The vast majority were kept in camps under deplorable conditions for years and then sent back to Vietnam. Little was done by the West, Prairie 2 writes, to control pirates that preyed on the boat people, as this was seen as a deterrent. The only country to do anything about the killing fields in Cambodia was Vietnam. And if you think Bush would have stopped the killing fields, all you have to do is look to Darfur. Bush's only action in 7 years has been to sanction a select group of companies who are doing business there. In Darfur, all are oil companies that are rivals of the companies owned by his cronies. Cambodia doesn't have oil, and it turned out that Vietnam did not have exploitable reserves that they thought it did back in 1963. If it would have had, we would still be there, too. And Simon in the UK writes, as he pointed to the genocide in Cambodia, Bush did today. And Simon writes, I don't think he ought to be opening up that can of worms. After all, as filmmaker John Pilger uncovered in his 1990 documentary, the Reagan-Bush White House funded and armed the Khmer Rouge, who were in exile and fighting to take the country back and inflict Pol Pot's madness all over again. This is insane. This is madness. This is absolute madness. It's also the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Regarding that statement by Chuckle Nuts. Oh, I'm Mike Malloy. This is Novam Radio. You're supposed to do that when you come back after a break. I'm sorry. I lost my radio announcer's manual here. Regarding the statement Bush made that we just played for you, that we have liberated 50 million people in two countries, Iraq and Afghanistan. Peter in Vermont writes, yeah, we liberated 50 million, you know, liberated in the sense that we've spread depleted uranium all over their country. And now generations of Iraqis will be free to suffer greatly increased rates of leukemia, birth defects, and various cancers. Yeah, that's been going on. That started in Gulf War I, the one that Timothy McVeigh participated in, when we found out that we were using weaponry, shell casings, that could penetrate the Republican Guard's armored vehicles and effectively roast the Iraqis inside. And that takes very, very heavy metal like uranium, very dense metals. So depleted uranium was the element of choice in building these weapons. The only problem, of course, is that depleted uranium is not really depleted in the sense that it's inert. It is not inert. It continues to be radioactive for about a quarter of a billion years. It just continues to be radioactive. Now, granted, it is, what is it, beta, alpha, beta? I don't know what the radioactive emissions are. They don't go very far. But they don't have to. All they have to do is get into the environment, get into the hands of five-year-old children, get into the wombs of women who may become pregnant, get into the testes of men who might want to be fathers, get into the food supply and the water supply, which is where it all is. See, we don't hear about this anymore, but during the Clinton years, Clinton found that the use of depleted uranium was so effective, he used it against the people in Yugoslavia. Yes, he did. So not only is Iraq salted with depleted uranium, so is Central Europe. Oh, I know, I'm not supposed to talk about that because that was Bill Clinton. And as far as Afghanistan is concerned, Afghanistan has been in the 13th century for 800 years, and it will remain in the 13th century for another 800. Forget Afghanistan. Forget it. It's a place over which to build pipelines and within which to raise opium poppy. Forget it. For Bush to stand there and say we've liberated 50 million people, what in the hell is he talking about? Every time you pick up any sort of responsible piece of journalism, notice the modifier there, you find that the Taliban resurgence in Afghanistan is almost complete. There is one area, one, Kabul, where the Taliban is not in partial or complete control. It is a 13th century country. It is no more interested in democracy than you are interested in a bad case of the fleas. $50 million we've liberated. Astonishing. And the Fox News listeners and the ditto heads, the ones who listen to their drug-addled death by temptation, Limbaugh, and his parrot, Hannity, and the psychopath on the West Coast, Michael Savage, everyone who listens to these people sit there and go, yup, yup, we've liberated 50 million people. Yup, 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 sure have, sure have. And now the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, this time under a different name, a different leadership, Ari Fleischer, for God's sake, is putting out political ads where soldiers missing their limbs are looking into the camera and saying, don't give up now. Ari Fleischer, you rat bastard, you filthy man. Pick up a weapon, Ari, if it's so goddamn important to you, and go to Iraq and kill people. Do it, Ari. And there he sits, Ari Fleischer, in his political consultant's rat hole, putting together these paid political spots, supporting more death and destruction, more depleted uranium, more madness, more insanity. With veterans whose legs are gone, whose arms are gone, whose souls are gone, whose lives are gone, who don't have anything left but to sit there in front of a camera and say, for Christ's sake, don't give up now, or what this man took from me will have been without any purpose at all. How criminally sad is that? I left my legs in Iraq. Please, please don't pull out now. And the irony, once again, is that these sons of bitches like Ari Fleischer, who have put these commercials together, don't understand what they are doing, or do understand what they are doing to these soldiers. And they don't care. They don't care. We will send you someplace where your legs will be blown off, and then we will exploit you in a political commercial. Son of a gun. I can't handle this tonight. I can't handle this tonight. I really can't. It is getting worse and worse and worse. These Republican right-wing Bushites, it just doesn't stop, does it? It doesn't stop. And yet he's unimpeachable. He's unimpeachable. In fact, the Democratic-controlled Congress will pass laws making it easier, as easy as Bush wants it, to destroy the Constitution. Oh, that's right. I'm not supposed to say anything about Democrats. Ooh. So Bush gets up there today in front of veterans. Veterans. I still, to this day, do not understand. I see veterans sitting there in their garrison caps, men Bush's age and older, who tolerate this son of a bitch coming into their building, this draft-dodging coward, this coke-using champagne unit coward, and they applaud him? This man who would destroy veterans' benefits, who would deny veterans health care, deny them education, deny their children survivors' benefits, take away their educational benefits, destroy everything that a soldier dies for, and they applaud him? They allow him into their building? Into their convention? This is madness. What is wrong with the VFW? What is wrong with these veterans? How do you do that? How do you allow a cowardly, anti-American, anti-military thug to stand in front of you and lecture you about Vietnam? How do you do that? That is shameful. That is shameful to the veterans who were in that hall and listened to this man today. Shame on you. Shame on you. Shame on you. There are 58,000 dead people whose names appear on that wall in D.C. And by allowing this punk to stand in front of you today, you people collectively dishonored every single one of them. Unbelievable.
Each letter stares at the name of the pit alone. Falling his heart is young and filled with pain. In anger he cries out, who is to blame for this woe in Washington that's made a cold black granite?
Your host for A Pence, Friends Future, it's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. We're going to come to your calls here in just a second. Lost in all this, of course, except for the families directly concerned, is the fact that a Black Hawk helicopter went down today in northern Iraq, killing all 14 U.S. soldiers on board. Deadliest crash in 2.5 years. And a few hours later, a suicide truck bomber struck a police station in the northern oil hub of Iraq, Baiji, killing at least 45 people and wounding 80. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki lashed out at American criticism. According to the Associated Press, the day after Bush expressed frustration with the Iraqi government's inability to bridge political divisions, Maliki is in Damascus at the end of a three-day visit to Syria, and he said, quote, no one has the right to place timetables on the Iraq government. It was elected by its people, end quote. He went on to say, quote, those who make such statements are bothered by our visit to Syria. We will pay no attention. We care for our people and our constitution, and we can find friends elsewhere, end quote. This is why Americans are dying and Iraqis are dying. This nest of madness that George W. Bush created, George W. Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, Ronald Reagan and Saddam Hussein created this. And it was just an absolute powder keg waiting for some psychopathic bastard to light the fuse. And Bush did it. Wednesday's deaths, in addition to the 14 U.S. soldiers, another U.S. soldier was killed during fighting west of Baghdad. All of these deaths now raise the toll of members of the U.S. military, the death toll, the official death count, to 3,722 who have died since Bush's invasion began in March of 2003. That's according to the Associated Press. 3,722. It's astonishing. David Gergen, who is a political chameleon, granted, he's a snake. He changes colors. He likes to suck up around power. He has served as an advisor to Presidents Nixon, Ford, Reagan, and Clinton. I wouldn't trust David Gergen as far as I can throw this studio. But CNN invited him to comment on the speech Bush gave today to the VFW, in which he invoked the example of Vietnam in arguing against the withdrawal from Iraq. Here's what Gergen said, quote, "He may well have stirred up a hornet's nest among historians. By invoking Vietnam, he raised the automatic question, well, if you've learned so much from history, Mr. President, how did you ever get us involved in another quagmire?" Gergen went on to say, "It's surprising to me that he would go back to that, and I think he's going to get a lot of criticism." Gergen went on to say, quote, "This is not a man who's talking about compromise. This is not a man who's talking about a plan B. This is a man saying, I'm hanging tough," end quote. Yeah, well, the reason he's hanging tough, David, is because it's not his blood that's being shed. It's not his arms being blown off. It's not his family who wails and screams into the night when somebody shows up with an announcement. I'm sorry, your husband's dead. Gergen acknowledged Bush's point that there were, quote, massive killings, end quote, when the U.S. left Vietnam. But Gergen said, quote, "He's wrong to say that Cambodia only occurred because we pulled back. There were many who believe, had we not gone into Cambodia ourselves, that country might have been more stable," end quote. Well, Jesus, David, no kidding. Don't you wonder who wrote Bush's speech? Don't you know it's some little neocon right-wing bastard who also hid in the bushes, hid behind rocks, hid in a garbage can, hid up his mother's dress, ran and hid in a Champagne National Guard unit during Vietnam, who hid, some little coward who now writes this tripe for this other little coward? And then Gergen says the reason we lost Vietnam in part was because we had no strategy. No, David, the reason we lost Vietnam is because we were the aggressor, the invader, the immoral invader who came into someone else's country. And the people in Vietnam said, all right, we'll accept 20-1 dead, but we will defeat you, you Western sons of bitches. We will fight you forever until we drive you out of our country and get your stench out of here. That's why we lost, David, not because we didn't have a strategy. Gergen went on to say, and the problem we've got now in Iraq, what's the strategy for victory? It's not clear we have a winning strategy in Iraq. That's what cost us Vietnam. That's why we eventually withdrew under humiliating circumstances, end quote. No, David, you suck up to power. We lost in Vietnam. We lost in Vietnam because we were in the wrong. Because we had no business being there. Because it was about imperialism. Because it was about control of another country. And we're losing in Iraq. And we're going to continue to lose in Iraq. Until somebody in our political system says, okay, it's time to leave.
Call me a chicken hawk. Proud to be a chicken hawk. Watch while I bring the mock. Receive to all Iraq. I didn't walk the walk, but I could talk the talk. Bawk, 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 bawk.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
Thank you. Okay, let me share this email with you, and then we're going to come to your phone calls. The number here is 800-989-1480. This is from Bonnie in California. And the subject line, Ari Fleischer was on Hardball tonight. Mike, there's a Hardball guest host from Boston. Can't remember his name. Yeah, I know who you mean. He's a former Boston Globe, I think, columnist who was caught plagiarizing and fired and now does substitute work sometimes for Chris Matthews. Anyway, Bonnie writes, while interviewing Fleischer, the host asked him, what was the soldier's name who was featured in the ad, the one for Fleischer's pro-war organization? Fleischer responded that he didn't know his name. Then following Fleischer's interview was Paul Rykoff from the veterans organization, what is that, votevets.org, I think. Rykoff said that he was appalled that Fleischer is using the soldier in an ad and doesn't know his name. I don't know why Rykoff would be appalled. Ari Fleischer doesn't give a damn about soldiers, humans, war, death, destruction, as long as he can make money on it. He served his time. He was White House press secretary. He's a neocon. He's a thug. He's anti-American. He's anti-life. He's anti-military. He's anti-everything. The only thing Ari Fleischer is pro-Ari. And if there's money to be made on a soldier's blown-off legs, this scummy bastard will step right up and make the money. And trust me, he's making money. Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people? It's just monumental. But hey, it's not about me. Let's go to your phone calls. Phil is calling from San Diego, listening on KLSD. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening, Mike.
You have to get me off speakerphone.
I'm sorry. Is it working okay now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the thing I was going to... You talked about... well, everything. I mean, there's so many things that you were talking about that just really got to me, but especially President Shrub and... Maliki. I mean, I have more respect now.
Hey, Phil, listen. I'm going to have to put you on hold, pal. We're having some kind of problem with your
your
phone.
I'm trying to figure out what's going on.
All right, maybe our chief engineer Ian can pick up the phone and tell Phil that he has to talk with us on some other line. I want to hear what Phil's got to say. We just can't handle the call the way it's coming through. Cassie is calling from Texas, listening on the internet. Hey, Cassie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Oh no, not you too. Are you on a speaker?
What?
Are you on a speakerphone?
No. Hold on. No, the speaker's not on.
Okay. All right. Well, let's try it. You're coming through kind of funky too, Cassie. But anyway, hi.
Hi. I wanted to tell you, I didn't get a chance to call when you had a teen night, but our website is looking for more liberal teens who want to write on a blog, on a political blog.
Uh-huh.
And I know that you have some people on, some callers who are young and who I think would be really good for that. And I'm wondering if I can give you the address for it.
Sure. Go ahead, Cassie.
You think... left.com.
You think
Y-O-U T-H-I-N-K left.com.
You think left.com.
Yes.
Okay.
And more writers, because two of our writers graduated high school and they don't have time in college, and everybody else is going back to school and is just too busy for the beginning of the semester. And... so we're looking for writers, and I love your show.
Okay, all right, Cassie. Let's put Cassie on hold. Cassie, apparently we're having some problems with our phone system. We got the web address, but your voice is coming over just terribly distorted. And we'll, let us try to correct it here. If not, we'll have to chat another night. And I'm going to try one more call. If this keeps up, we're probably going to have to move on from the phone calls. Let's see. Let's go to Billy Bob, who is calling from Tennessee, listening on the internet. Billy Bob, welcome to the program.
Hello. Am I coming through all right?
No, you're not. Go ahead. Go ahead. Talk to me. All right. All right. Let me put you back on hold, Billy Bob. All right. We're going to stop all the calls right now. I don't know what's going on, Truth Seekers, but it's just not working.
It's always something, isn't it, huh?
We'll try to get it figured out here. So if you're on hold, just stay. Ian, we'll try to figure it out, and then we'll come back to you. The name I couldn't think of, Jack sent it to me. It's Mike Barnicle who is hosting or sitting in for Chris Matthews on so-called Hardball. Barnicle, I don't remember the story completely, what he's involved. He was a columnist for the Boston Globe, I think, and got caught in a plagiarism scandal. I don't know if he ever admitted to it or if it turned out that the charge was wrong. I don't remember. I frankly don't care. I just know that Barnicle has a reputation, at least in my head, as being somebody that it might be good not to trust completely.
Well, while we're waiting for the phone situation to get resolved, I just thought anybody out there who has a laptop or a PC or any kind of internet connection, if they'd like to, they can go see pictures of Molly at MikeMalloy.com in the gallery. There's some new photos of Molly. So this would be a great time, since you can't call the show right now, if you're looking for some. Now, if you're driving, obviously, this is, you know, if you're listening on satellite radio and you're in your car, or listening on terrestrial radio in your car, I don't suggest that
Kathy,
you pull over and find an internet cafe, but if you had nothing else to do,
Kathy,
and you were ready for a coffee break, it would be a productive use of
Kathy,
your time.
Kathy, I know you want the world to know that you have a cute 3-year-old, but
isn't she just precious? You should see her in the swimming pool these days. She actually does handstands and backflips.
The other thing that has made the news in the past 24, 48 hours has been self-criticism from the CIA. Have you seen this? The CIA is admitting it was unprepared for Al-Qaeda before 9/11. Here's what it says. Former CIA Director George Tenet, quote, failed to lead a strategic effort against Al-Qaeda before the September 11 attacks, according to an Inspector General report released, I think, yesterday. The intelligence community's understanding of Al-Qaeda, quote, was hampered by insufficient analytic focus, the report said, as, quote, the CIA made no comprehensive report on bin Laden since 1993, and had not examined the potential for terrorists to use aircraft as weapons, and had done only limited analysis on the potential of the United States as a target, end quote. Now, Tenet called this analysis flat wrong. What do I call it? Another piece of horse crap tossed to us, the masses. Not only was the CIA on top of things, they had bin Laden, the supposed ringleader, right in their hands when he visited the hospital in, Dubai? If they wanted to put the hammer down on this guy, they could have. Consequently, we're left with two options. Either they allowed September 11, 2001 to happen, or they facilitated the attacks, either with or without bin Laden's cooperation. There can be no other answer, unless, of course, you're an illiterate and thus unthinking moron. So, another piece of horse crap tossed to us, the masses. Not only was the CIA on top of things, they had bin Laden when he visited the hospital in Dubai. So now comes this report. This report, you see, is designed... Let me put on my... there we go. I got my tinfoil hat on. This report is designed to refute what the 9/11 Truth Commission, in all of its various manifestations, is trying to get out to the American public. That the Bush crime family either made it happen or let it happen, but the Bush crime family knew in advance it was going to happen. The attack on this country. Now, because I am not yet to the point where I can accept the idea and remain sane that Bush and his cronies planned the attack, although I can definitely see Cheney doing that, I have to subscribe to the idea that they let it happen. Now, if that's the case, what a perfect time for the CIA to release their mea culpa, and a perfect time for George Tenet to say, no, 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 this is all not true. Because this, you see, this simply says, well, we dropped the ball. No, you didn't drop the ball. You didn't drop the ball at all. You rat bastards knew exactly what was going to happen and stood down because you were ordered to by Dick Cheney with all his trips, all of his contacts with the CIA over the years. Stay down. All of his control of NORAD, all of his control of everything. Stay down. There are 4, 5, 6, 7 hijacked airplanes flying around America. Don't anyone do anything. Stay down. Let's see what happens. Ah, you filthy pigs.
United States. A terrible failure to the President of the United States.
A terrible failure.
Why did they not warn the innocent people of New York who were needlessly murdered?
The President knew before 9/11.
The White House had advanced information that would have prevented the tragic attacks of 9/11.
And then ultimately, of course, the ultimate weapon, the use of military...
And now a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Email here from Barb. Mike, we need your help promoting the March on Washington, D.C., Saturday, September 15th. I believe this is the impeachbush.org, I think. Barb writes, I live in Phoenix, and the reason the Hispanics were so successful organizing their cause was because of Hispanic TV and radio. Actually, if you could urge the other progressive hosts to bring attention to this march, it would be great. As you are aware, Veterans Against the War have organized this event. Okay, what is it? VoteVets.org. Answer was fined $10,000 for their posters in D.C. a few days ago, and lawsuits have been filed. The White House is running scared, and we need to be there in forceful numbers. Public opinion stopped the war in Vietnam, and hopefully we can get these bastards impeached or get resignations. That's from Barb. Sure, I certainly support the idea of demonstrations. I do. I said several weeks back that I've had enough because I can't see the effectiveness, not because there's a lack of dedication on the people who organize and attend these demonstrations. No, not at all. Don't misunderstand. But because in order for a demonstration to make an impact, to have an impact, I should say, on the American public, to let the rest of the public know that there are thousands, hundreds of thousands of Americans who are fed up, there has to be some sort of coverage, some sort of attention. Mainstream media is nothing but a huge whorehouse, no offense to sex workers, and will not report, will not do its job, refuses to do its job. So 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 people in D.C. demanding the resignation or the impeachment of these rat bastards, if the rest of America knows nothing about it or gets some cock and bull story in the New York Times 3 days later that says several thousand people demonstrated against George Bush's policies in Iraq, how effective is that kind of action? But I do support it. I will. Somebody else emailed me about it the other night. I mentioned it. If you are inclined to do this sort of thing, for God's sake, do it. Do it. The future of this republic may depend on it. Who knows? I honestly believe that the most effective event that could be put together if the American public was capable of doing it, which it is not. Would be a massive strike, like the French do. Every time 60 million French get pissed off about something, they just stop. Or whatever the population of France is, they just stop. Everything comes to a standstill. The trucks don't roll. The communication systems don't work. The market closes. The farmers say to hell with it. The truck drivers sit down. Nothing happens until the issue is resolved. We don't do that. I don't know why we don't do that in this country. But I think that probably the only effective means of hammering this administration into attention would be that sort of general nationwide strike. I don't know what else. Do you have a better idea? If a march advocating impeachment in Washington D.C. is your answer to this, okay, I'll support it. Go for it. Do it. And I'll mention it. As far as other so-called progressive talk show hosts, I don't have contact with them, not really. But you have their email addresses, the folks that are organizing these events. You know how to get in touch with those people who say they're liberals or progressives, some of whom are and some of whom aren't. And you know who I'm talking about. You know, if you listen to these programs, you know who is doing a progressive thing and who is not. Who is pretending? But I think the most effective thing that could be done now is just an absolute general strike, and not just for one day. What other suggestion is there? The political system is broken. It started in 1994, in 1993, with Newt Gingrich, who set out to totally corrupt and destroy language necessary to our political system, language necessary to identify ideas, to identify candidates. And now that pig wants to run for president? Oh, yeah, okay. So for almost 15 years, there has been a direct assault, starting with language and then the impeachment of Bill Clinton, to absolutely, totally destroy our system. And by God, they have been very, very effective. We have a class of Democrats now in leadership positions in the Democratic Party that are absolutely useless. Absolutely useless. They have no courage. They stand in the way of the Constitution doing what it is designed to do. They facilitate this madman in the White House. So what's left? Demonstrations in the street? That could be a great trigger, couldn't it? For something. Or 150 million people saying no. Hell no. I've had enough. And just stopping. Just stopping. Think about it.
Midnight choir, I have tried in my way.
Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. One of the, you've got to wonder about this, don't you? At least I do. The much anticipated Senate testimony of General David Petraeus, the U.S. commander in Iraq, regarding this horrific situation that Bush has gotten us into. You know, he's Petraeus is coming home to give his report to the Senate. Guess when he's been scheduled to provide testimony? September 11th. According to Think Progress, the timing of Petraeus' testimony was first revealed a couple of days ago by John McCain, Republican of Arizona, in a conference call with conservative bloggers. According to the National Review, McCain said he had been told Petraeus would testify on the 11th. He said, quote, "The calendar I've been told is that Petraeus will testify the 11th. We're off September 13th and 14th for Rosh Hashanah." What? We're off September 13th and 14th for Rosh Hashanah? Really? I don't know. Maybe I've been out of the room here. When did we start canceling the United States Congress in order to celebrate a religious holiday? Oh, wait. We always do that for Christmas. Oh, okay. And Easter. Okay, well, then Rosh Hashanah. Do we do that for, let's see, what are some of the more prominent Muslim holidays? Is the Congress canceled for Ramadan? I don't know. I'm not trying to be a smartass here. I don't know. I'm just reading what it says here that John McCain said. We're off September 13th and 14th for Rosh Hashanah. The Senate debate will begin September 18th. Petraeus will testify on the 11th. What? White House spokesman Gordon Jandro confirmed that date during a press briefing on Air Force One the other day. Oh, man. You see, Petraeus is mandated by Congress. He's been ordered by what has become the least effective branch of government in the history of this republic, the United States House and Senate. He has been mandated by Congress to testify about the Iraq status report before the document is delivered on September 15th, which means that the Bush crime family is already writing the document that Petraeus will parrot from in his four-starred uniform as he sits before the democratically controlled Senate Armed Services Committee. Mm. Isn't this? It is a carefully orchestrated and rehearsed dance, isn't it? And then there's this. I wanted to bring this up Monday because this appeared Sunday in the Washington Post. The Defense Intelligence Agency, the DIA, which is, first of all, should have been abolished. It should have been murdered in its crib. Whoever came up with this idea had to have been some right-wing thug. I don't care if it's Democrat or Republican. But the Defense Intelligence Agency is preparing to pay private contractors up to $1 billion to conduct core intelligence tasks of analysis and collection of data over the next 5 years. Do you understand that? Now, this fits a well-established pattern of Bush administration transfers of government work to private contractors. Obviously, everything that this rat bastard can outsource, he outsources. But think about this for a second. First of all, since Bush took office, the value of federal contracts signed by all agencies each year has more than doubled to reach $412 billion. That's how much has been outsourced. Government functions, $412 billion. Now, the DIA has not specified exactly what it wants these contractors, like, oh, I don't know, who do you think? DynCorp, Blackwater? The DIA did not specify exactly what it wants the contractors to do, but said it is seeking teams, to fulfill what it calls operational and mission requirements that include intelligence gathering and collection, analysis, utilization, and strategy and support. The DIA says that they're probably going to hire five or more contractors. Now, these are private corporations that are publicly owned. So who do you think will receive the first loyalty of the employers, the corporation or the U.S. government? And if it comes down to a contest between a report that encourages investment or a report that encourages U.S. security, which do you think will win? And I mean investment in the company to whom the contract has been given. Now, this action by the Defense Intelligence Agency comes a few months after the Central Intelligence Agency Director, Michael Hayden, acting under pressure from our hard-ass Democrats in Congress, announced a program to cut the agency's hiring of outside contractors by at least 10%. So the CIA cuts 10%, the DIA increases it by $1 billion. The CIA's effort was partly provoked by the frustration of managers that officials with security clearances were frequently resigning from the CIA to go to work for the private corporations to earn double the money while performing the same work. This is astonishing. This is unbelievable. Is there going to be anything left in the United States that has not been farmed out by this filthy administration? Anything. The prison industrial complex, the medical industrial complex, the execution industrial complex, the military industrial complex, the intelligence industrial complex, the roads and bridges and dams industrial complex. What's going to be left? The question is raised whether contractors should be involved in, you know, private companies. Can you think about it? Think about it. Private companies involved in intelligence collection and analysis, interrogation, covert operations. Huh? Should private contractors do that? Or are those activities so sensitive that they should only be performed by highly trained intelligence community professionals? Which one? Huh? What do you think? We are in for a rough ride, Truth Seeker. Privately contracting, well, it's already being done. Torture, a lot of the torture that we have that has been perpetrated in our names against detainees, people that we've scooped up all over the world, a lot of that torture has been done by trainees. Private contractors, people in the employ of the CIA or the DIA or the FBI or the XYZ or whatever, private contractors who have been honing their skills on unfortunate devils who happen to have been rounded up in, pick a country, and taken to dark, cobwebby, spidery places and tortured. And you want a quick preview of what's going to happen? Just for you Second Amendment folks out there, most of whom are right-wingers, remember the gun grab that occurred in New Orleans when Blackwater went in fully armed and told everybody, turn in your weapons or we will kill you.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 21 past the hour. A couple of emails here. This is from AJ in Seattle. It's a quote from Scott Ritter. AJ writes, Mike, thought this paragraph from an article at Common Dreams was worth reading. This was originally at truthdigest.com. Here's the quote from Scott Ritter. Quote, the vice president is the single greatest threat to American and international security in the world today. Not Osama bin Laden, not the ghost of Saddam Hussein, not Ahmadinejad or Kim Jong-un to ill, not Al-Qaeda, not the Taliban, or Jose Padilla himself. Not even George W. Bush can lay claim to this title. It is Dick Cheney's alone, the single greatest threat to American security in the world today. Operating in a never-never land of constitutional ambiguity, which exists between the office of the president and the Congress of the United States, Cheney's office has made its impact felt on the policies of the United States of America as has no vice president's office before him. Granted unprecedented oversight over national security and foreign policy by executive order in early 2001, many months prior to the terror attacks of 9/11, Cheney has single-handedly steered America away from being a nation among nations operating in accordance with the rule of law and toward its present manifestation as the new Rome, a decadent imperial power bent on global domination, whatever the cost. End quote. Scott Ritter, former United States Marine, and weapons inspector in Iraq. Cheney, and the problem I have with, I agree completely with Ritter. I think Cheney is a totally out of control, complete, definable, clinical psychopath. And I wonder if it's because of his physical condition. Is that a cause of all this, Cheney knowing that he hangs by a thread constantly, or is it an effect of hanging by a thread constantly? Is someone who has had, what has he had, 4 heart attacks, 5 heart attacks, has a pacemaker, could pop at any time, is someone in that condition more or less inclined to blow up the world? That's a fair question. Because Cheney seems hell-bent. So on doing just that, on causing as much death and destruction as he possibly can. So is it a cause? Anybody got any ideas? Email me. Is it a cause or an effect of Cheney's physical condition, his insanity? These are scary times. I also got an email here. Al Gore is the surprise choice of Democrats in Scottsdale, Arizona. This is from the Arizona Republic from, what, today, I guess. Democrats in District 8, which covers most of Scottsdale and Fountain Hills, surprisingly chose non-candidate Al Gore as their favorite presidential nominee in a recent straw poll. Of the announced candidates, John Edwards took the popularity prize with 29% of the vote on the second ballot. More than 40 participants from Scottsdale, Fountain Hills, and Rio Verde foothills took the poll Saturday. About 35 people had paid a $20 fundraiser fee required to receive a ballot. A local contingent of Gore supporters showed up complete with stickers. When tallying the votes, the local party leaders considered both the first choice of voters and the popularity of candidates. The popularity of vote was important because it showed who voters would choose if Gore does not run. Gore won the first choice by 51%, followed by Edwards with 17%, Clinton with 14%, Obama with 9%, Biden with 6%, Kucinich with 3%. Wait a second. There's only 35 people that voted. Yeah. But that, no, I, you know, I've got no problem with that. You know, why? Sure, with 35 people. I think that is a, I've been to Scottsdale. I think that's pretty reflective of how Democrats would vote. I'm waiting for Gore to declare. You know, why not? So. All right, we have a break coming up here, and we'll come back and get more deeply into some of this madness. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
The Mike Malloy Show, because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
Wake up every day, and you start to cry, but you wanna die. It has to happen to the best of us.
It's about 25 before the hour. There are so many important items, I guess that's what I should call them, items, although that seems to reduce people's lives down to something that fits neatly into a radio talk show, and I hate to do that. I can't do that. Having said that, now I'll do it. There are so many items that are being blown off the radar screen because of the filth and the warmongering and the neo-fascism that pours out of this administration and the refusal on the part of media and the Democratic Party leadership to stop it. So many things blown away. For example, this story, which is about a week old, and I have seen absolutely nothing about this except what appeared written by Jay Reeves for the Associated Press. As we all know, huge chunks of the Mississippi Gulf Coast, Mississippi and New Orleans, is still in ruins from Hurricane Katrina 2 years ago. But guess what is going on? Rich federal tax breaks designed to spur rebuilding in that area, right, are instead flowing hundreds of miles inland to investors who are buying up luxury condos near the University of Alabama's football stadium. Oh, my God. Alabama. About 10 condominium projects are going up in and around Tuscaloosa, and builders are asking up to $1 million for units with granite countertops, king-size bathtubs, and Bama decor, including crimson couches and Bear Bryant wall art. Now, And it says, while many of the buyers are Crimson Tide alumni or ardent football fans not entitled to any special Katrina-related tax breaks, many others are real estate investors who are purchasing the condos with plans to rent them out. This is the outrage. This is why Sarge, this is why other people who listen to this program, who worked, and who don't listen to this program, who tried to do something about the disaster in Mississippi and Louisiana, finally gave up because they were going insane. People are living in formaldehyde-encrusted trailers, and the money, the tax breaks designed to help people, are going to developers so they can build condos near the University of Alabama that go to private investors. It was called the Gulf Opportunity Zone Act of 2005, or referred to as the GO Zone. And the people sucking up the tax breaks are intending to take full advantage of these tax benefits available to investors. Now, what are the investors supposed to be doing? Building and buying condos near the University of Alabama that has Bear Bryant wall art? Son of a bitch. This is what makes my mind snap like a rubber band. The GO Zone, that's what it's called, Gulf Opportunity Zone Act of 2005, or GO Zone. The GO Zone contains a variety of tax breaks designed to stimulate construction in Mississippi, Louisiana, and Alabama. It offers tax-free bonds to developers to finance commercial projects like, oh, I don't know, shopping centers, hotels, you know, things like that. But it also allows real estate investors who buy condos or other properties in the GO Zone to take accelerated depreciation on their purchases when they file their taxes. Now, the GO Zone was drawn when the Republicans in Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, wherever, in the Senate and the House, when the GO Zone was drawn, it was drawn to include the Tuscaloosa area, even though it is 200 miles from the coast and only got rain from Katrina. This was supposed to be about getting people into housing in New Orleans, in Louisiana, or Biloxi. It was not about condos in Tuscaloosa. This is how the Bush crime family has so thoroughly undermined and corrupted any kind of moral fiber left in this country. This is astonishing. This is just unbelievable. Locals say Tuscaloosa was included in the GO Zone through the efforts of Republican Senator Richard Shelby, who is from Tuscaloosa, who graduated from the University of Alabama, and who sits on the Senate Appropriations Committee. But aides to the senator, no, said Tuscaloosa made the cut because it was classified as a disaster area by the government after Katrina, not because of the senator's influence. Oh, of course not. And, of course, Republican defenders of the GO Zone said the Tuscaloosa area needed the aid because of the hundreds of evacuees who remained here for weeks after the hurricane. Oh, are they going to buy the million-dollar condos? A spokeswoman for Senator Richard Shelby said, quote, the senator believes that the GO Zone program and others enacted since then to assist with the rebuilding efforts following the devastating 2005 hurricane season have been extremely successful in accomplishing their goal, end quote. Now, you want an example? Here's an example. A guy named Dave Toombs, a real estate investor from Irvine, California, with no connection to Alabama, bought two new upscale townhouses at a development called The Traditions, just minutes from the Alabama campus as an investment, as investment properties. He said, this developer from Irvine, California, said he hopes to use GoZone tax benefits when he files his taxes. Meanwhile, the people in this devastated area, 2 years on, are living in formaldehyde-saturated FEMA trailers. They can't get jobs. They can't get doctors. They can't get health insurance. They can't get education for their kids. This is just vile. This is just vile. This guy, aptly named Toombs, the real estate investor from Irvine, California, said, if we qualify for the Go Zone, it will be icing on the cake. It's another plus check to put in the column. An investor could write off more than $155,000 of the cost of a $300,000 condo in the first year and use those savings to lower his taxes on other income, according to a tax attorney who advises investors in Southfield, Michigan. And then Tuscaloosa, Alabama real estate broker Richard Ellis said an investor from Birmingham, Alabama, contacted him about a GoZone property and wound up buying 30 condo units for about $200,000 each. What is that, $6 million? The Congressional Budget Office estimated that the GoZone bonds and accelerated depreciation would cost the government $3.5 billion in revenue over the next 10 years. President Bush signed the GoZone bill less than 4 months after Katrina struck. It was sponsored by Republican Senator Trent Lott, who lost his beachfront home in Pascagoula, Mississippi. Meanwhile, on the storm-raked shores of Lake Pontchartrain in Slidell, Louisiana, a man named Chad Mayo, a pawn shop operator whose business was flooded by Katrina, asked, "The Go Zone? What's that? We're in the dead zone." You've just got to wonder, don't you, Truth Seeker? I wonder this more and more and more as I go about my daily business, you know. How much more of this can we as a cohesive or coherent society handle? Tax breaks designed to stimulate rebuilding in an area 2 years now out from a devastating hurricane. And what is the legislation, the tax breaks being used for? For rich bastards to continue to exploit an already hideously exploited population in, as Bush would say, that part of the world. My God.
Give a country a push and put us back on the road to what's right and true. George W. Bush. Well, give a country a push. He's the man who'll do what's right for me and you. Now Republicans and Democrats.
Stepped on a pop top, cut my heel, had to cruise on back home. But there's booze in the blender, and soon it will render that frozen concoction that helps me hang on.
It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to the crew tonight who made a great effort to handle the phone problem that we'll have fixed by tomorrow, I promise. Ian Huff, engineered out of our flagship station, KPHX in Phoenix. Billy Foster, our chat room moderator. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Catherine Bay, our executive producer. Last thing I've got on the agenda tonight. This is another one of those things that have been pushed off the radar screen by this megalomania, this insanity that is going on inside the Bush crime family. And that is the question of Matthew Rothschild brought it up, why most Democratic senators are hiding even from censure of this corruption. Rothschild writes, when the history of the Bush administration is finally written, the date of August 6, 2007 should stand out. That was the day that a pair of identical resolutions were introduced in the Senate and the House to censure Bush, Cheney, Gonzalez for a catalog of sins which could easily be turned into an impeachment bill of particulars. One resolution deals with the Iraq War, the other with various assaults on the Constitution. Now, taken together, the charges include misleading the nation into the Iraq War, authorizing the National Security Agency to illegally spy on Americans, allowing the torture of detainees, denying them due process rights, misleading Congress and the American people about the firings of the U.S. attorneys and obstructing investigations into that scandal, and undermining acts of Congress by flagrant use of signing statements. Senator Russ Feingold introduced the two measures in the Senate. Feingold said, quote, Congress cannot stay silent when the American people are demanding that this administration be held accountable for its blatant misconduct regarding Iraq and its attack on the rule of law, end quote. And Representative Maurice Hinchey introduced the two censure motions in the House. Hinchey said, quote, the White House has continuously misled and deceived the American people while disregarding the rule of law that guides our democracy. He said, censure is necessary to let the historical record show that an equal branch of government found the actions of this administration undeniably reprehensible. Now, end quote. Now, the only problem I have with both Feingold and Hinchey is that they don't name George W. Bush. Feingold's resolution says Congress cannot stay silent when the American people are demanding that this administration, and Hinchey says the White House has continuously misled and deceived. Why not say Bush and Cheney and Gonzalez in their statements? Now, Hinchey got 19 co-sponsors. Feingold only got 1.5 co-sponsors. Tom Harkin signed on to both the resolution on Iraq and the one dealing with constitutional violations, and Barbara Boxer signed the Iraq motion only. So, as Rothschild raises this issue, where are the other Democratic senators? My God, where's Biden and Byrd and Clinton and Dodd and Kennedy and Leahy and Obama? Where is Reid? And what is censure? It's a public spanking. It has no penalty. Certainly not removal from office, which is what a conviction for impeachment would require. And that's what Bush, Cheney, and Gonzalez deserve. Where are the...
he's going after the Democrats again. Oh, no. Mike's not supposed to do that.
And as Matthew Rothschild says, we've been hearing all these noises coming from the Democratic leadership that impeachment would be a, distraction and would tie up the business of the Congress. Who buys that? What is more important than standing up for democracy? But you see, censure wouldn't tie up Congress. Censure would do anything. It takes what? A roll call vote. How long is that? And still the Democrats are sitting this one out. What's the excuse? Well, it can't be that they don't believe in censure. After all, sit down. Here it comes. 29 Democratic senators were on record in favor of censuring the president when his name was Bill Clinton. 29 of these rat bastards. Dianne Feinstein introduced the bill to censure Clinton back in 1999. But you don't see her signing on to Feingold's bill. Now, here are some of the names of the Democratic co-sponsors of Dianne Feinstein's bill from back in 1999 to censure Clinton. Democrats who are still in the Senate: Daniel Akaka, Byron Dorgan, Richard Durbin, Daniel Inouye, Joe Lieberman, Ted Kennedy, John Kerry, Herb Cole, Mary Landrieu, Carl Levin, Barbara Mikulski, Jay Rockefeller, Charles Schumer, and yes, Harry Reid. Where are they now, truth seeker? Oh my God, these are Democrats who are still in the Senate, who are willing to sign on to co-sponsor a censure motion against Clinton because he lied about a sex act. And they leave Russ Feingold twisting in the wind with his pissy little censure motion. They won't support him. And there's a footnote that Matthew Rothschild points out here on the Clinton censure. Even 9 Republicans were in favor of just censure, including Pete Domenici, Mitch McConnell, and Olympia Snowe. So don't let any of these people, Democrat or Republican, say that censure is somehow unthinkable or unconstitutional. Back in 1999, they not only thought about it, they did it. But now, when Bush and Cheney and Gonzalez are assaulting our very democracy, all of these senators have gone into hiding. They're just letting Bush, Cheney, and Gonzalez carry on with impunity, like some Argentine junta. Oh, my God. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. I'm Mike Malloy.